This episode of Misadventures in Marketing is brought to you by the American Marketing Association, San Francisco. AMASF is a member-run organization that has been serving the Bay Area marketing community for over 80 years. Through programs, events, workshops, and discussions that introduce the latest trends and developments in the industry, to networking events that bring together the best marketing minds in the region, AMASF diligently works to foster professional learning and career advancement opportunities for all of its members. Joining is easy. To become a member of AMASF, go to amasf.org. That's amasf.org, and click on Get Involved on the top menu, then become a member. For just $199 a year, you'll get access to events, resources, credentialed learning opportunities, and a community of fellow marketers who will help you expand your network and advance your career. The AMASF membership, the investment you make for the career you love. I've run into a sales team that really doesn't want marketing to do that. They're like, give me what I call the raw leads or the top of funnel leads. And that is a recipe for disaster for the company, because it's marketing's job to get rid of all the tire kickers. And, you know, usually the sales guys and gals tend to be so aggressive, and they're like, I don't want these marketing guys to qualify anything for me. That is always a challenge within a company. And you've got to hope that your CEO understands that and respects that, because a lot of them don't. Hello, and welcome to the Misadventures in Marketing podcast, presented by the American Marketing Association, San Francisco chapter. I'm Steve Haney, a fractional CMO in Silicon Valley.
And I'm Peter Farrago, a high-tech marketing executive in the Bay Area. Each week, Steve and I come together to discuss all things in high-tech marketing.
We share our own experiences running marketing teams with a special focus on technology startups, our successes, our failures, things that worked and things that didn't. We'll also be inviting our CMO friends and other marketing colleagues onto the show every once in a while, and hopefully we'll impart some wisdom along the way. Hey, Peter, how's it going?
It's going great. You might not be able to see it, but I'm holding up an artifact of being a girl dad. I have my mug here and it says, beautiful girl, you can do hard things. And I kind of secretly like this coffee mug. And so that's what I've got today.
Ta-da. Well, as they say, Peter, as the father of daughters, I can completely identify.
My cup overfloweth.
All right. So today we are bequeathing you with a new nickname. You are now Peter, always in trouble, Farrago.
That's right.
Earlier in the green room, we were talking about growing up and being in high school and being very energetic, and you just feel like you're always in trouble. I completely identify with that. But I love that nickname, yeah. Always in trouble.
Mischievous, I think that's what mischievous too. It might be always looking for trouble, yeah. And maybe I need to work on some stuff.
Okay, so seriously, we are going to be talking about lead funnels today. It's a very broad topic because there are so many ways a lead funnel works in different types of businesses. But of course, we're going to kind of focus on our narrower experience around tech. But even within tech, a lead funnel is very different for B2B SaaS versus a mobile consumer application versus something with a product, you know, a business with a product-led motion. So we're going to be talking pretty high level. And just so the audience understands, our own experiences and prejudices will probably lead us more back to B2B SaaS, but that's fine. And then, you know, talk about how you analyze your lead funnel, how you optimize it. And then, of course, the inevitable critical handoff to sales or some mechanism whereby a financial transaction actually happens. So, Peter, what I thought we'd do first was just kind of outline the customer journey and then where the lead funnel sits within the customer journey.
maybe let me set the stage, just a brief primer or like some tips, because I actually had to go look up some terminology before this to knowing that we were going to talk about it. So funnels aren't just like a visual. Everyone has a funnel on a chart that has this stages, many steps yeah. that they're, yeah, stages. And, you know, they're supposed to be kind of strategic frameworks, if you will. When you hear lead funnel and customer journey and sales process, they're actually different, but they interlock. And so I just want to let everybody know that, you know, it usually starts with understanding the decision-making process of whatever type of customer consumer you have. And then that starts to become the steps of the funnel that you care about.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I think the lead funnel is somewhere near the top of the entire customer journey. And the way I look at the customer journey is that the first thing the customer sees is your brand, but I'm a brand guy, or it may be word of mouth. I always say brand is your first salesman, right? It's the first thing they see about your company. And then maybe from there at an event, the prospect talks to somebody, or there's an online interaction from the online presence of your company. And then there's the information capture, meaning you get an email, you get a name, some way that the company has a direct communication to the prospect. And this is usually the lead funnel part. And then these online actions, it could be cooking that prospect online as they're downloading your white papers, or maybe seeing ads for a mobile app. And then when you've got a number of people within an enterprise using it and they want an enterprise sale, you've got to talk to a sales guy. At that point, marketing's lead funnel and marketing's job, I don't want to say it's done, but you've got what's called an MQL, a marketing qualified lead. And you've got a definition of what that marketing qualified lead is that you hand it over to sales, and the sales process kicks in. And that's what I usually call the opportunity pipeline. So, you know, I have this graphic because I have my model that I use where you've got the funnel leads down into a pipe, which is the opportunity pipeline. And at the end of the opportunity pipeline is closed won or closed loss, meaning you've got a customer who's paying you. And then of course, beyond that is we used to call account management. Now it's called customer success, simply because a lot of the SaaS products, you have to keep that customer around for a long time. You know, you've got the CAC and the LTV, and for that whole ratio to work out, you have to keep that customer on to, you know, get the proper ROI on your sales and marketing costs. They're not necessarily buying a perpetual license, right? They're buying a subscription. So it may take you 3 months, 6 months, a year to get back that investment. That is what I call the lead funnel, and that's what marketing is responsible for. But like I was saying, I'm looking at customer journey very broadly, from awareness / interest to engagement, probably online, to a more involved process, to the financial transaction.
Yeah, there's kind of consumer and then business to business stuff that's usually a bit different. The way I've thought about it, the way you're taught in school, and the way I think most people will grok this is I usually think about the classic, you know, psychology stages of decision model that you're taught, which is AIDA, awareness, interest, desire, action. You know, that's the classic funnel where you were mentioning brand and whatnot as maybe a touch point. There are stages of, say, a decision or commitment process, and then there are lots of customer touch points that may or may not be linear. This is one of the biggest challenges, frankly, but like you have these stages in the funnel that you're trying to influence as a marketer, maybe on the awareness side, becoming aware that you exist, the ad impression, maybe someone discovers a podcast, maybe you put out a blog post, maybe you're at a trade show and there's a conference booth, right? That kind of thing. And then when the person knows about you, wants to evaluate you, whether it's a consumer or a business, then you're kind of in that, sometimes people call it middle of the funnel. But so I think about AIDA as like the main one. The modern funnel, which you were also addressing, because AIDA was developed before the internet existed. And now what's happened is the more modern funnel, I don't know if it has a name, is more operational. And it's what you were also talking about too, right? So if I take a step back, the first thing you got to figure out before you even think about the concept of a funnel is just kind of like, what is the decision making, the discovery and decision making process that your customer will go through? Usually you start with this idea of how does a customer become aware and make a decision? Mm-hmm. And that becomes stages in a funnel typically for your unique business. And it could be more of a classic business, you know, it could be more of an online digital business. It could be a mobile app. The other concept that I like to think about that I also remember from my undergrad days is the idea of, you know, how involved the purchase decision is. So there's low to high involvement purchase decisions. And if it's an easy one, like the classic pack of gum at the, you know, cash register in the, well, cash register sounds so antiquated now because we use our phones to pay for stuff. You see all these little impulse items like a pack of gum. That's a low involvement purchase decision. Oftentimes, you and I work on things that people will need to be involved with the decision and the approval. There's big money involved with the purchase. There's legal compliance. There's security compliance. So It's a much higher involvement purchase decision, and that requires a lot more being ready, preparation, handling different decisions and customer interaction points along the way.
No, I think it makes perfect sense. Is like, how do you define your, using the AIDA model, how do you define the stages of your funnel?
I realize it's a generally applied strategy of like defining a funnel. And what makes it hard to talk about is that everybody's situation can be slightly different. That's all.
Yeah. Well, and you know, we probably should just focus on B2B SaaS because that's where we've got a lot of experience. Although I think both you and I do have a good deal of experience in mobile apps as well. And, you know, driving end users to, again, that financial transaction at the end of the process. But, you know, in terms of B2B, I was just thinking about this the other day in terms of Canva. And, you know, It's a very broad market. They are definitely up there with, you know, Google and iCloud and signing up for these free accounts where you get a bunch of stuff. And everybody, it's just viral. Everybody uses it for design and graphics and everything. I recently signed up a nonprofit that I'm doing some work with, not professionally in my personal life. You get the pro version of Canva and you just put in your nonprofit 501c3 number. And, you know, it occurred to me how when you've got that kind of model where you've just got a bunch of people using it, and then, because I've been through this with developer tools, right? Go in, it's a PLG motion, it's a freemium offering. You get a whole bunch of people or an organization to sign up. But then, to your point about moving along the funnel, your product also has to meet certain specifications in terms of security and compliance. If that organization then comes in and says, okay, we've got one department on this, signed up for freemium, then there was a departmental credit card swipe that got about 10 people on. And so that product will do one thing, but then when you go up to enterprise, the product has to meet a whole bunch of other levels of compliance in terms of security, safety, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so, you know, those organizations need to be able to make sure that along that funnel, they can scale the product as well as the customer grows in terms of their buying. Then you get to the point where you have to do some funnel analysis. It can be well defined. You know, let's say you do have all the stages identified, but inevitably, you know, these different stages, things can get stuck where you have a whole bunch of leads getting caught up in one stage of the funnel and you're trying to figure out why. What at that stage is causing a whole bunch of folks to not move further down for you to be able to take them and qualify them and move them on to sales?
That process you described, we tried to manufacture that go-to-market at a company called Acompli, which made email for professionals on your mobile phone. It's now Microsoft Outlook Mobile. Got bought, so I think we did we need the right feature set. We were riding a couple trends, I guess. And one of them is sort of back then we called it BYOD, bring your own device. People were using their mobile phones at work a lot. Now, enterprise organizations know how to set that up and be able to like separate the data you can access from your personal phone between personal and enterprise. If you leave, they can protect their data. But we were kind of riding that wave. And then there was also at the same time kind of this thing called the consumerization of IT. And that really just meant that products we use at work should be as well designed as consumer type products, because typically a consumer product is built to be a lot easier to understand and use. And so one early company that did a lot of that consumerization of IT thing was called Box. Box does file management and storage and stuff for companies. And so their stuff is really easy to use and drag and drop and so on. And then the other concept I'd say, which is a little risky, which we were doing, was what you might call shadow IT. And shadow IT just means like something so popular that people, workers start using it at work. And so our email, it was really quite a good product and ahead of its time. So we wanted people to think it was so good that they wanted to use that for their email client for work. They wanted to use that as their main email on mobile. And so all of those things basically would trigger, like your business would sort of trigger us eventually having enough people in some organization using our product on their phones that we'd have to have a conversation with the IT department, or the IT department would shut it down and then we would reach out, right? So one way or the other, what we would do is signal to some company that, hey, we have a really popular product that your employees want to use and we should have a conversation. And that's kind of a bottoms-up adoption strategy. I kind of like it, or sometimes it's called a pull strategy. On the other hand, you're also doing like the arguments to the enterprise about how this could, you know, improve productivity. And what I'll say with respect to funnels is we kind of had to figure it out, right? We had these hypotheses around BYOD and shadow IT and consumerization of IT trends. And then we're like, okay, let's build this product that people just have to use for work because it's just really tuned for that. And it's so much better than anything else. But that's a good example of like a funnel type. How do you think of that funnel, right? And how do you think about like the triggers that get you to the next stage of a conversation?
This episode of Misadventures in Marketing is brought to you by Peak Bound Studio, the Bay Area video production house for high-impact marketing videos. Online video is quickly becoming the universal language of business and the primary medium through which marketers speak to their prospects. According to Forbes and market research firm Statista, 90% of all businesses are currently using online video in their marketing. And in 2025, 85% of those businesses will increase their spending in online video over last year. Enter Peakbound Studio. Peakbound Studio is not just another video production team. They are storytellers, visual artists, and high-tech experts rolled into one. They manage everything from the initial concept to the final edit. Your online video presence has to be responsive, vibrant, and constant to get the attention of prospects and spread your message into every corner of the marketplace. Peakbound makes sure your messages are unique, compelling, and pop in today's attention-scarce world. So whether you need brand storytelling, customer testimonials, corporate videos, or short-form social media content, Peakbound delivers videos that don't just look good, they work. Learn more at www.peakbound.studio. That's www.peakbound.studio. Peakbound Studio, the video production house that puts your online video to work.
I was doing a funnel analysis at one of the companies I was at. Again, it was product-led growth, but it was a local download. It was a tool that you downloaded and ran locally on a Windows machine. And of course, there's all kinds of different ways to do this. But the way we did it is, you know, we sent them a serial number that they put in, and they basically got the full meal deal for, I can't remember, 1 month, 2 months, something like that. And then they would be let out. And we found that the reason they weren't moving down is because people just get busy, right? They're going to download a new piece of software. They're going to try it out. In our case, it was this tool. And we just found out that so many people, literally, they turn around, 2 months have gone by, their free trial had expired, and it was just keeping a lot of people from moving to the next level. So one of the things I discovered this, I went back to the team and I said, why are we making it like 2 months from the point they put in to their serial number or whatever method we use to activate the software? Why don't we just leave it there and start it from like first interaction or look at, because we instrumented everything. I mean, we knew every keystroke they were taking within the app. And let's look for a certain level of activity and then start some kind of clock if we're concerned that we're giving away too much. And so that's what we did. And there were still a lot of folks that just stayed, but we had like a huge uptick. I think it may be 25 to 30% of the folks who before would just completely fall off. If we gave them a few months to actually engage with the software and not just stop the free trial, then we were able to push them down the funnel and we had a prospect that we wouldn't have had before. That was just one example in my own experience of why is this part of the funnel very full? Why is this one relatively empty? What's the acceleration? That's another thing. I don't know if you have any rules of thumb for acceleration, like why are leads moving from stage one to stage two very quickly, and stage two to stage three, not as quickly. What is that calculation? And then how do you increase acceleration so that leads are moving as quickly as possible? You know, you may find that, you know, your LDRs aren't doing certain things they should be doing, or there are certain things they should be doing that you don't understand or didn't know. Like at this stage, they need to be sending out more information, or maybe our email nurture isn't saying the right things to get them to try XYZ to move them along. And so, you know, all those considerations around movement from stage to stage of the funnel, acceleration rates being where you want them to be between stages of the funnel, all these kind of things you need to look at when you're analyzing and trying to get what you've committed to the company as marketing qualified leads to the sales team, so that then they have a full enough opportunity pipeline, which, as we know, is in addition to their own prospecting efforts to hit those net new customers, make the quarter, make the half of the year, make the year, et cetera, and ensuring that that whole thing is moving along such that marketing is doing its bit to make the number at the end of the year.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. You know, again, listening to that, there's a murder mystery is what comes to mind. Maybe that's going to sound like a non sequitur, but what I feel like you've done is you understood behaviorally the steps people take. You thought about some trial that people were experiencing by downloading software. You called it locally, but that just means to your computer or device versus going to a web browser and doing what's called software as a service or SaaS. But basically they were downloading it and you guys had a way of knowing how much they interacted. So that's one step. You said instrumentation, which implies analytics. So it just meant you know when people are interacting with your software and the usage. And so you're able to, from that, like put together a sense of like how people interact and how long it takes. So then you get a funnel and it takes some measurement and analytics or whatever. And that might be the boring part for people. But the murder mystery part that I like, which is what you did and I thought is super interesting and creative, is like you basically said, can we do it a different way? And we're able to like track it and see if there's a difference. And then what you did is here's how it's working. Here's sort of a baseline and here's how I can improve it. And that was the murder mystery. It's like, well, what if I tried to have them experience the product this other way or had them take these other steps or whatever? And then will that make a difference in how many people end up using it over time or how fast they might like go through different steps to use it? And that's the part that I think is super fun. It's like you set up the funnel, you see the stages, like a decision-making process or an amount of usage or whatever. And then you start to figure out how do I improve it? And then you come up with different ideas and try that. I think I mentioned this before. I have this love-hate relationship. Like I love the data. I want the data. What I want to see is what's happening and figure out how to change it. That's really what I want. I could care less actually about setting it up, but it is important to do it well.
Yeah. And this stuff is hard. I mean, it's really difficult to find out those dynamics within the funnel to understand. I'm sure there's all kinds of things like in specific verticals, like your colleagues, the heads of marketing at competitors or similar enterprise software companies, what are their acceleration rates between the stages? Right? How have they defined theirs? You know, all this best practices stuff. But, you know, this happened to me the other day. I wanted to check out Clay, which is one of these, you know, data enrichment platforms for, you know, lead databases, certainly in the context of marketing, but, you know, CRM databases and, you know, going back and repopulating and optimizing the data. Clay does that really well. And you can re-import your data back into HubSpot after it's done its magic, finding names for you. They use AI on the back end to fill in all the data on your lead database and enrich it such that you can take better actions going forward. And the trial was like 2 weeks or something, I believe. I'm not sure. But, you know, life got in the way. All right. Now, I'm sure if I reach out to Clay, they would reactivate it for me. But I signed up. I got the nurture emails. You know, hey, have you tried this? Hey, have you played with that? Hey, have you looked into this? And I could do that. And I'm sure they would say, hey, Steve, we know you got busy and here we'll reactivate your 2 weeks. I don't know why they just don't leave it open if I'm not using it. And again, wait until I've reached a certain level of activity and then say, okay, we're going to stop you now or something like that, saying, we appreciate you using the platform and engaging. Sally from our sales team is going to be giving you a call in another day or so and emailing you and let's talk about it. And I can say, well, I was just playing with it. Thanks very much. Point is that there are all these opportunities where you can try to figure out how to keep the leads flowing. And then, of course, this comes to act three of our play here. And that is, when does that prospect that's at the bottom of the funnel become a marketing qualified lead? In my career, I've always had a very brief, very easy definition, no more than five things that define an MQL. The classic one, which is BANT, you know, budget, authority, need, and timing. Maybe that's an old-fashioned notion now. Who knows? But basically, that's another high-level concept, and it works very differently for each business. But once you know that that person's ready to buy, they control the purse strings, right, and they've got the money available to them, then you hand it over to sales. And it's in this limbo where either sales is going to take it, they're going to reach out to the prospect and turn it into a sales-qualified lead, or they're going to bin it. Or there may be other stages down there, like not a sales qualified lead yet, but maybe somewhere in the middle where we're going to reach out to them in 6 months, et cetera. And just like you, Peter, we are MarTech stack veterans more than once. We've had to build out all these systems between HubSpot and Salesforce and even going all the way back to Eloqua and all these various marketing automation systems and customer relationship management systems, and tie all these things together in a way that this process works very easily. So I was just wondering, what are your thoughts around what a marketing qualified lead is, when you like to hand things over to sales? How do you think about that problem?
Yeah, I mean, it's similar to the overall concept we're talking about, which is trying to abstract a decision-making process or a discovery, trial, evaluation, commitment process. You know, your business has an offering. People are going through different stages of figuring out whether they have this problem to solve and you're the right thing to help them solve it and so forth. And so just like with the lead funnel, the pipeline or sales funnel has a similar and actually like intersecting set of abstracted steps. First of all, I think everybody knows a customer journey is not always like step one followed by step two. It can be in any order and kind of spaghetti. But what we do, once we get to like the decision of a business-to-business company that's selling its product to other businesses, you know, there is a sales team typically for bigger, more expensive products. That's what we're talking about today. They have to engage the customer. And then with interaction with the potential customer, they can actually map to these steps. And so what marketing tends to do, it's not always 100% this way, but mostly they tend to try to get to the salesperson or team a potential customer who has demonstrated somehow to us that they're ready enough to talk to. And ready enough to talk to is what you talked about with BANT. I think BANT is a classic timeless thing. It's like, are they ready to make a decision? You know, do they have the money to make a decision? Is that the person who can make the decision? Or are you just talking to some other guy who... So it's like, because, you know, the sales guy will, or woman will then have a conversation with them and they call that discovery. where they are basically trying to evaluate if the marketing qualified lead is actually what they would define or accept as a sales qualified lead. And what that kind of implies is that there's a shared understanding or definition that how we look at various customers at different stages of their potential commitment. It's actually one of the most important kind of feedback loops, ongoing sets of interactions that a sales and a marketing team can have in this kind of B2B setup, is that, like, do we both agree when it's worth for a salesperson to talk to a potential customer?
Because those sales resources are expensive, right? So you don't
Actually quite expensive. Yeah. And I think, you know, like sometimes, like,
and they're constrained. There's only 24 hours in a day.
Yeah. And I think, you know, sometimes you could think as a marketer, hey, I'm doing all this work, getting them excited and educated and whatever. And you think, I'm making the sale so easy, but it's actually kind of what you want. You'd rather not have a bunch of folks that they're talking to wasting time. So with all that in mind, getting back to your terminology, you're looking for signals and you might be doing what's called lead scoring. Like they've clicked on my pricing page. They've downloaded a white paper. They've actually filled out the I want to talk to sales.
Yep.
And so then you on the marketing side are saying, oh, I've clocked a group of people who've moved through like doing a certain number of things that give me confidence that they're ready to talk to sales. And then we call that the marketing qualified lead stage. The next stage down funnel usually is described as the sales qualified lead. And that is the first moment, typically a salesperson, again, it's a bigger contract, more expensive, you need humans involved. They go and they actually schedule a meeting. They talk to the customer. They usually do what's a product demonstration, a demo. They go through, hey, here's a customer might have questions. And they basically are qualifying them. In their heads, they're asking these questions and trying to see, like, do they need us? Do they like us? Are they comparing other things? Can we make sure they know why we're different and better? And then at the end of that, the salesperson may decide, okay, they are actually now going to go from what we all call a lead to an opportunity. An opportunity is more valuable than a lead.
Yeah.
Right. So now you go from MQL to SQL to then SQO or SQOs. The cool kids call them SQOs. So that's a sales qualified opportunity.
Right.
And that means the salesperson then has them in their funnel and they define them and they try to keep them to as few as possible because you're trying to abstract a set of kind of decision making or commitment gates that someone's going through. And in our world, they need to play around with the product a little bit to see how it works in their setup.
Sure.
So like in my world, you have to touch our product for a while to figure out if it's going to work for you. So we put them in what's called a proof of concept phase where the offering is a little bit tailored for them and they can play around with it. We keep in touch.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you're moving down a funnel, right? Because there's more MQLs than there are SQLs. And then at the end, the only two options usually they measure is the person bought from us or the person did not buy from us. And that's what we call sales closed, like the end of the interaction is closed. And it resulted in one of two outcomes typically, which is won or lost. And so you'll hear people say closed won, closed loss. And that's what they mean. It means they got all the way down to the final, like, you know, to the final decision of yes or no, I'm going to buy your thing. And they've told you yes or no. And the funny thing about sales closed lost is you don't know because nobody tells you they're not buying you, right? So then you have to like follow up or let a certain amount of time go by. And nobody wants to tell somebody bad stuff. So they just don't call, they just start replying to your emails and stuff. And you have to be like, I think we lost that. You try to get them to tell you and you go into your database and check it as lost.
Right.
So if you don't know if half of those have a probability of being won or lost, then you can't do pipeline. You can't do any revenue forecasting. And constantly your CEO or anybody else is like, hey, dude, where are we with revenue? And so you have to go back to these funnels. So the funnels aren't just like those geeky things that we do just because. It's how we keep track of the progress of our business and how we start understanding like how far along various potential customers we're talking to could turn into real customers who are giving us real money and generating real revenue. And so it is actually important to do it well. And if you go into a company as a marketer and you're in a real B2B setup, you're going to get pulled into it immediately because that's all people talk about.
I call that, you know, my job is to separate the wheat from the chaff. However, more than once, I've run into a sales team that really doesn't want marketing to do that. They're like, give me what I call the raw leads or the top of funnel leads. And that is a recipe for disaster. For the company, because it's marketing's job to get rid of all the tire kickers and get them out of the way. And, you know, usually the sales guys and gals tend to be so aggressive and they're like, I don't want these marketing guys to qualify anything for me. I want them out of the way. That is always a challenge within a company. And you've got to hope that your CEO understands that and respects that, because a lot of them don't. They just don't get it. They're like, no, I don't want marketing protecting, again, the most precious resource in the company, which is the time and attention of the direct sales team. I don't know if you've ever run into that conundrum, but it's happened to me pretty much every time.
Yeah. How do you handle that? Because it's inevitable. It's a healthy tension, but it can be uncomfortable. So how do you try to like manage that?
Well, part of it is, why don't these guys feel they're getting enough leads? I can talk about many incidents where I, as a head of marketing, have really screwed up not getting them the leads
they need in the way they need them.
There was one that was just, I don't know how I missed it, but our team on the West Coast was getting nothing. And everybody in the Midwest was doing okay. And everybody on the East Coast was drinking from a fire hose, just in terms of the leads we were generating for them. Again, they had their whole other part of the business with renewals and, you know, their own prospecting and reaching out. The West Coast sales guys were just really pissed and like, are we the like bastard child here? Why aren't we getting the leads
that everybody else?
And like, I remember we were at a trade show once with one company. We had all these leads coming in. It was a pile on and the CEO was there. And, you know, he basically said, look, just Steve, just don't qualify the leads. Just give them all the leads.
That's
it was
right.
not a good way to do things. But every lead we got from that show, instantly within Salesforce, we made a marketing qualified lead. And we let the sales guys go do their thing.
In the early days, the very early days of a go-to-market sort of setup, fancy way of just saying, like, you got your first couple salespeople ever in a company, and you got, in my case, I'm the first marketer ever in the company, and well, there's no playbooks. There's, you know what I mean? It's just like it's a lot of newness. But, you know, it's growing pains. And what I find is the bar for what's quote-unquote qualified is much lower, because you are kind of trying to have every conversation you can and learn from it. And also, I find that the salespeople tend to have both what are called hunting and farming skills, meaning they can self-prospect, they can reach out. So if they're not getting leads from marketing, they're just, you know, going down lists of folks who are reaching out to the top 100, whatever in this industry that might want your product. And so everybody's just trying to spark conversations with different companies who might be able to need your product. And when I'm setting up big inbound motion here, it just means like I'm trying to do a lot of content and SEO and trying to get, you know, folks to come to us that I can pass to sales versus just like a lot of cold email outreach and campaigning stuff. So inbound versus outbound, for those who know, like it's a new product without much brand recognition. In our case, a little bit of a new category, and we're trying to educate folks on this new solution. And we're just starting to like build up our awareness and our credibility. So we are limited in our ability to pull in people and attract them to us to talk to us. So I'm just trying to do best effort and get as much of that going as I can. And then, you know, then you start seeing the trends and you can build off that. And then you start to get these numbers you can rely on a little bit. One of the harder parts I find is maybe early on, or if you're trying to, well, get measurement in place. And try to have the murder mystery type attitude. I think that's the creativity in marketing and demand generation, understanding behavior and understanding how the people adopt or think about or discover the product. Those are the parts where you can add so much value and try to be a good partner if you're in a B2B situation with your sales team and learn from them. You know, go on calls, listen to sales calls. So look for those things and just get into the problem solving of it. And yes, we have stages of the funnel we use to track that. But that's the underlying like process, I think, and approach.
Yeah. Well, some of the stuff you mentioned that I really love was the murder mystery aspect, right? Investigating why the funnel is or isn't behaving like it is. And then the random nature that the funnel is not a straight line. Maybe we should make that the title of the podcast. We should get somebody on here, more of a, you know, a consumer app person, completely different dynamic in terms of how that would work. Managing that kind of funnel is completely different. I'm not saying, I mean, maybe they do have an enterprise sales team. These are like, again, consumer apps for consumers, probably got a 15 to 20 to 30 person company. And all they do is sell that one app. How do you, maybe you do some advertising on the apps. It's just a, it's a completely different dynamic. And those are big, tens of millions to hundreds of millions of dollars businesses. So it would be interesting to talk to somebody about what a sales funnel or a marketing funnel or lead funnel rather looks like to them versus this more B2B scenario.
Different. It's different for every business. And that's the big takeaway. You got to understand that journey for that customer in your business. And then that becomes stages of the funnel and how you approach it. And so I also would love to talk to someone who's much more hardcore B2B funnel, because that actually gets very measured and scientific and process oriented. And people who really do that deeply go much deeper and frankly, more scientifically than you and I covered just now.
Yeah. Yeah. We could do a deep dive on that. Well, right. Peter, do you want to read us out?
I can certainly do that. Well, first of all, thank you, Steve, for being a great co-host, as always. Thank you to our audience for listening. Thanks always to Lorenzo Fernandez-Kopek at Peakbound Studios, who does all the post-production editing to make us sound and look great. To our marketing manager, Ian Robinson-Lambert, for helping get the word out and getting people to know about us. Ariana Azevedo for all the brand and graphics work she's done. And as always, to Eric Widener, the president of the AMA San Francisco chapter, for presenting this podcast.
And Julianne Bernales.
Yes.
For producing this podcast and making sure that everything comes out great in the end.
Yeah, Julianne is kind of like our executive producer now, and she does a lot of the story shaping and deciding what stays in and goes out from a narrative standpoint, because you and I can go on these long sessions and go in different directions, and she says, nope, clip, 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 and she gets in there with a strong and good opinion about what should survive the edit, and I like that.